I'm very clear. Israel must have that, does have that right to defend herself, and Hamas bears responsibility.
A siege is appropriate? Cutting off power, cutting off water?
Well, I think that Israel does have that right. It is an ongoing situation. Obviously, everything should be done within international law, but I don't want to step away from the sort of core principles that Israel has a right to defend herself and Hamas bears responsibility for these terrorist acts. And I would call on all responsible states, particularly Middle East responsible states, to call this out for what it is, and to stand with the world in condemning, utterly condemning, these actions by Hamas.
First of all, raise your hands if you're into scrapping tuition fees. That's everyone. Renationalising water and electricity. Yeah.
Supporting the staff at McDonald's are on strike. And they're not asking the earth, they're asking for the basics. 15 quid an hour, the right to know their hours in advance and to have trade union recognition. That ought to be the norm in 21st century Britain. And it will be the norm if we have a Labour government.
But I'm asking you a big principled question. Will you nationalise the big six energy companies, yes or no?
No.
No, you will not. This is what you said as part of your 10 pledges. Public services should be in public hands, not making profits for shareholders. Support common ownership of rail, mail, energy and winter. You promised that 18 months ago and now you're saying no. Why?
I don't see nationalisation there. There is
What else does public hands mean?
Having spoken to the President of Israel, i.e. having spoken to the people who are actually involved in trying to wave all this awful conflict, categorically tell you that I did not threaten the Speaker in any way whatsoever. I simply urged him to ensure that we had the broadest possible debate.
And your MPs?
Broadest possible debate, so that actually the most important thing, which is what do we do about the awful situation in Gaza, could be properly discussed by MPs with a number of options in front of them. That's the right thing to do. The Speaker did the right thing in making sure the debate was broad. But the tragedy is the SNP walked off the pitch because they wanted to divide the Labour Party and they couldn't. And the government walked off the pitch because it thought it was going to lose a vote. So we had one party that was simply seeking to divide on an important issue. The government has lost control of its own MPs and couldn't control the vote.
An end to the fighting, not just now, not just for a pause, but permanently. A ceasefire that lasts, conference, that is what must happen now. The fighting must stop now. I look forward to visiting Israel with LFI as soon as possible. It's a top priority for me to visit, to listen, and to understand. I'm committed to doing all I can to continue rebuilding the important bond with our friends in Israel. And I'm looking forward to seeing you all at the LFI annual lunch in November. I'm honoured to be invited.
We had the worst terrorist attack since the Second World War in relation to what happened on October the 7th, terrible terrorist attack by Hamas. And Israel has the right to self-defence. And in the very early days, people were saying there should be an immediate ceasefire. And I said that would only benefit Hamas. We're now months down the line. Thousands of people have been killed in Gaza. There's a threatened offensive in Rafah where there's a humanitarian catastrophe. And now is the time for a ceasefire.
Not earlier.
Because the circumstances...
It would have saved a lot of lives if you'd done it earlier.
The circumstances have changed dramatically. And, Jeremy, to say to Israel immediately after October the 7th, you cannot go and get your hostages back for using force, wasn't something which a serious politician was ever going to say. But we're in which a different... We're in a different position now. Thousands of people have been killed. There's a desperate situation in Rafah. A million and more people who can't go forwards and can't go backwards. And that's why very many people are saying now is the time to stop the fighting, to create the conditions to get the hostages out, get much needed aid in, and for a political process that gets us to a peaceful solution, a two-state solution.
But I gave you...
We support the defensive action taken by the UK over the weekend alongside our international allies against the Iranian attacks on Israel. And we welcome the Prime Minister's call for restraint. Once again, we all salute the professionalism and bravery of our armed forces. We also support the RAF planes being sent to the region to bolster Operation Shader. Their efforts are vital for a safer world. Mr. Speaker, there can be no doubt that the attack perpetrated by Iranian forces this weekend has left the world a more dangerous place. It targeted innocent civilians with a clear intent to destabilise the region. It must be wholly condemned by all.
There aren't safe routes for people from a number of African countries where there are terrible things happening. You talked about it being right that we protect people from persecution. Would you increase the number of safe routes?
I don't think safe routes is the answer to the vile trade that is being run to put people into small boats.
We welcome migrants. We don't scapegoat them. Low wages, poor housing, poor public services are not the fault of migrants and people who've come here. They're political failure. Political failure. So we have to make the case for the benefits of migration.
There seems to be room for Natalie Elphick down in Dover, but not Diane Abbott up here in London. Can you welcome Diane Abbott back to your happy fold?
Well, look, Diane is going through a process, Nick, as you know, in relation to the investigation of an issue relating to her. That's not finally resolved yet. But, you know, this Labour Party is a changed Labour Party. And when those that either represent or voted Tory say to me, I now feel this is a party that represents the national interest and can take our country forward, then I think that's very important. Because
Diane Abbott? Will the system be resolved prior to the election day?
Well, we'll have to resolve it very soon now, Nick, because I think the deadline for...
Come on, Sakir, you know me well enough. You know I'm going to come out. If you respond like that, you know I'm going to come again. Is this going to be resolved prior to election day, Sakir?
It'll be resolved. Yeah, of course it will. We've got a cut-off date of, I think it's the 4th of June or thereabouts. So we've got a, you know, Nick, we've got a date in place.
Are you hopeful of having her back in the fold?
Well, Nick, that's a process we're going through. The National Executive Committee, in the end, will decide that. Right. But we've got a process in place and we'll complete it, well, actually, reasonably soon now.
All right.
Are you blocking left-wing candidates from standing in this election?
No. I've said repeatedly over the last 2 years, as we've selected our candidates, that I want the highest quality candidates. That's been the position for a very long time.
Can I just clarify, this funding that you would give... Who would actually be in ownership then of that infrastructure that you're funding in order for GB Energy to actually generate its own energy? Would this be via local authorities? You talked about private sector involvement too, but I'm just trying to clarify the extent to which it would actually be generating its own electricity, and that would all be publicly owned.
Well, no, it'd be an investment vehicle, so not an energy company. So it's an investment vehicle in the energy of the future. The money going into it would be public money, but used to trigger private investment along.
I'm astonished that those that want to be Prime Minister of the United Kingdom are pulling out of debates and out of scrutiny. I can see, based on what I've seen in debates so far, why they want to do so, because this is... a party that is out of ideas, out of purpose. They're tearing each other apart. And I think for millions of people, particularly with the heatwave today, they'll be saying, I want a government that's focused on the day job, that's getting on with resilience for today and tomorrow, for however long this heatwave goes on, and focused on the cost of living crisis. Instead, we've got fantasy economics. But pulling out of a TV debate when you want to be Prime Minister doesn't show very much confidence.
Under my leadership, there will be zero tolerance of anti-Semitism, of racism, of discrimination of any kind.
Jeremy Corbyn made our party the party of anti-austerity, and he was right to do so. The party that would fight cuts to public services. He made us the party that wanted to invest more heavily in our public services, and he was right to do so. And we must retain that. We build on that. We don't trash it as we go forward. We should treat, if you like, the 2017 manifesto as our foundational document. The radicalism and the hope that that inspired across the country was real.
Can you guarantee that under your leadership, the 2019 Labour commitments to nationalise water, energy, rail, the Royal Mail, they'll all be in Labour's next election manifesto?
I've made that commitment.
So obviously in the Labour Party manifestos for the 2017 and 2019 general elections, there are pledges to abolish tuition fees for students. If you became party leader, would you argue for this to be put into the manifesto in the next election?
I would. I think it was a very important manifesto commitment.
So here we are, it's Euston Station, just about 7 o'clock in the morning. About to get a train to meet the rest of the Shadow Cabinet and Jeremy Corbyn in Birmingham to launch our manifesto. I think in this election, what I'm hearing is people really want change. They want to end the inequality that they see. They just want decency and dignity. And that's what this manifesto is about. Real change, ambitious change, and ambition to meet the needs. Please have a read of it and vote Labour.
Let's just go through that, because in the last two general elections, you asked people to elect Jeremy Corbyn as their Prime Minister. You said, I do think Jeremy Corbyn would make a great Prime Minister, Jeremy Corbyn. Did you mean that?
I was certain that we would lose the 2019 election.
That wasn't
my question. I was certain that we would lose it. I did campaign for Labour, of course so I did. I will openly say I campaigned for Labour. I wanted good colleagues to be returned into the Labour Party.
When you said it.
And I wanted a party that was capable of being changed so we could face the future again.
Did you not mean it when you said it?
I was certain that we would lose. And
that's
I think many other people
question.
Were certain that we would lose.
So you didn't mean it?
I was certain that we would lose.
So you said it because you didn't think he would be Prime Minister anyway?
Of course I campaigned for the Labour Party at the last election and the election before that and the one before that. I've always campaigned for the Labour Party and I'm glad I did because I wanted good colleagues to be returned to have their seats so that we could fight for the future of the Labour Party. When I grew up, my dad was a toolmaker. He worked in a factory. It's true. My mum was a nurse, and actually, we couldn't make ends meet, which actually isn't a laughing matter. We couldn't make ends meet. We couldn't pay our bills.
There's a two-child benefit cap for families, some of whom have more children than that. This is hitting some of the poorest and most vulnerable in Britain.
Yeah.
The Resolution Foundation think tank says families cannot claim about £3,200 per extra child a year. Dozens of organisations, from the Trade Union Congress to the Church of England to the former Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, have called for it to go. Will you scrap it? Is that in your manifesto tomorrow?
No, it isn't.
You were happy to serve in Jeremy Corbyn's shadow cabinet from 2016. Without the waffle about believing Labour wouldn't win the 2019 election, just give me a simple yes or no answer. Had Labour won the election in 17 or 19, would you be happy to serve in the cabinet under Prime Minister Corbyn?
Well, I didn't think we'd win either of those, Graham, and there's no getting away from that. And certainly,
just a simple yes or no. If you were part of the shadow cabinet, would you have been happy to serve in his cabinet if he won?
Well, Graham, it's a pure hypothetical. Didn't cross my mind because I didn't think we would win. But let me just...
So
I mean,
you campaigned for him because you thought you wouldn't win?
Look, I campaigned for Labour because I've campaigned for Labour in every election and I wanted good colleagues to be returned.
Climate change is the issue of our time, and as the Extinction Rebellion protest showed us this week, the next generation are not going to forgive us if we don't take action. There's been lots of talk, now we need action.
What would you do with the baby sock home and the asylum seekers on board if you're Prime Minister?
Well, the thing we need to do in relation to asylum seekers is to make sure that we stop people climbing into boats on the northern coast of France.
But what would you do with the barge
across
that's moored off Portland, currently housing a couple of hundred asylum seekers?
Well,
what would you do with that?
That is evidence of the failure of the government. They are using barges, they're using hotels, it's costing the taxpayer an absolute
But would you
fortune.
Get rid of it?
We cannot go online.
Would you get rid of the barge?
The moment what's happening is the number of people coming across the channel is at record numbers again, I think, today. We have to stop that happening. And until we get control of our borders, until we fix that problem, you've got an ever bigger problem, whether it's barges or hotels that haven't been fixed.
But so your shadow immigration minister has previously said he does not agree with the use of barges. We've seen reports of conditions on board, some describing them as prison-like. If you are Prime Minister in 2 weeks' time, are people going to stay on that barge?
Look, We're not planning to have more barges and more hotels. But that is the problem
we're in. I'm talking about the one that exists at the moment in Dorset. Are you going to get rid of it?
We need to reduce the problem in the first place.
Do you realise you caused offence, though, with those comments?
I referenced Bangladesh the other night is because it is, for asylum purposes, a safe country, and it's got a returns agreement with the UK. That is a good thing that everybody should be proud of. I certainly wasn't intending...
There are other countries, and there are lots of higher countries. Why did you pick out that
community? It's a safe country, it's got a returns agreement, so it's an example of how the two our two countries can work together. But I certainly wasn't seeking to or intending to cause any concern or offence to anyone in that. I celebrate and value the relationship we have. And what I want to do is make sure that the Bangladeshi community here, under a Labour government, strengthen that relationship and we go forward together. And that's the debate I've been having in my constituency for many years, and it's what I want to do across the whole country.
Prime Minister, you secured a significant landslide at the general election, but in areas where there's a high Muslim population, Labour either lost seats or had their vote share slashed. Do you accept that there's a problem with the relationship between the Labour Party and British Muslims at the moment?
Well, the first thing I'd say is this, that very many people voted Labour in that general election who've never voted Labour before. So we now hold seats in parts of the country that have never had a Labour MP. So this is an incredibly strong mandate. Of course, wherever we weren't able to secure votes, I'm concerned about that. But this is a clear mandate for change, for renewal, for a different way of doing politics and a return of politics to service. The days of self-entitlement and self-interest are over.
Be in no doubt, those that have participated in this violence will face the full force of the law. The police will be making arrests. Individuals will be held on remand. Charges will follow. And convictions will follow. I guarantee you will regret taking part in this disorder, whether directly or those whipping up this action online and then running away themselves. And I think that's clear from the prosecutions and sentencing. Today we're due sentencing for online behaviour. That's a reminder to everyone that whether you're directly involved or whether you're remotely involved, you're culpable and you will be put before the courts if you've broken the law. And so that's happening today, that sentencing.
Dodgy contracts, privileged access, jobs for their mates. This is the return of Tory sleaze.
But we have to fix the plumbing before turning on the taps. So hear me when I say this. No more money without reform. The Iranian regime has launched over 200 ballistic missiles at civilian targets in Israel. It's too soon to assess the impact fully, but I utterly condemn this attempt by the Iranian regime to harm innocent Israelis, to escalate this incredibly dangerous situation and push the region ever closer to the brink. It cannot be tolerated. We stand with Israel and we recognise her right to self-defence in the face of this aggression. Iran must stop these attacks, together with its proxies like Hezbollah. Iran has menaced the Middle East for far too long. Chaos and destruction brought not just to Israel, but to the people they live amongst in Lebanon and beyond. Make no mistake, Britain stands full square against such violence. We support Israel's reasonable demand for the security of its people.
The bombardment of Vukovar. This was almost certainly the most sustained attack on an urban area in Europe since the Second World War. The estimated daily round of missiles was 10,000. The loss of life was extensive. The precise number will never be known, but estimates sit at about 1,100. Only 1,000 of the 9,000 family homes in Vukovar were left standing. Essential services, including electricity, water, and the sewage system, all failed. Wells were targeted and destroyed. In addition, Much of the fabric of Rukavar's cultural, historic and religious life was destroyed through the shelling of churches, schools, kindergartens and public buildings. Ambassador Herbert Oken, who visited Rukavar on the 19th of November 1991, commented that the city was, I quote, completely shattered, and likened it to Stalingrad at the end of the Second World War. Video footage taken at the time depicts a landscape of burnt out cars, buildings reduced to rubble. Every house had suffered damage. The predominantly residential area south of the River Vukha was flattened. And countless bodies lay in these streets and yards unburied because of the danger from shelling to anybody who ventured out. These findings reveal not an armed conflict directed at military objectives, but a radically disproportionate attack deliberately intended to devastate the town and its civilian population.
The policy of this government towards ceasefire has not changed. There is no ceasefire worthy of the name, which does not, as item number one, include the return of all the hostages. And that is what we're working for day and night. But I also want, in the spirit of that touching speech, as we did at the event marking 1 year since October the 7th, to read the words of the Hainu prayer. Have mercy on them and bring them from distress to comfort, from darkness to light, from slavery to redemption, now, swiftly, and soon.
I could stand here and say Runcorn was close. We successfully defended three mayoralties, and the opposition parties tend to do well in these sorts of elections. But I'm not going to do that. What I am going to do is to respond by saying, I get it. We were elected in to deliver change. We've started that change. Waiting lists are down. Wages are up. Interest rates are down. Huge, massive difference for people who are mortgage holders. But the message I take out of these elections is that we need to go further and we need to go faster on the change that people want to see. And that's what I'm determined to do.
Let us just ask you quickly, you have to choose now between Davos or Westminster?
Davos.
Why?
Because Westminster is too constrained. And, you know, it's closed and we're not having meaning. Once you get out of Westminster, whether it's Davos or anywhere else, you actually engage with people that you can see working with in the future. Westminster is just a tribal shouting place.
And Chris is at Westminster tonight. Busy first day of the new term there, Chris. A new Prime Minister in the chamber, but his predecessor says he's going.
Indeed so, Jane. Sir Keir Starmer tonight becoming the steward and bailiff of the 300s of Chiltern, which is the slightly wordy procedure, or one of them, via which an MP can leave the Commons, because technically they can't resign, but they can be appointed to a Crown appointment, which means they can no longer be an MP. And that has been confirmed formally by the Treasury tonight. That's the mechanism via which these things happen. And so Keir Starmer is no longer a Member of Parliament. Now, his opponents are pointing out, rather bluntly, that this was his final U-turn, because just a matter of a couple of weeks ago, in a BBC interview, asked explicitly if he would carry on as an MP until the next general election, he said yes. But the reason this matters, beyond marking the departure of a man who until very recently was our Prime Minister from politics entirely, is what comes next. You mentioned it there in the headlines. A by-election in Holborn and St Pancras in North London, just the kind of spot that the Green Party of England and Wales would love to try and secure. And in particular, Zach Polanski, the leader of the party in England and Wales, has talked about his desire to one day be an MP in London. Now, there's some within the party who are saying, hang on, when he was running for the leadership of the party, he made a big thing about not being an MP. So there's a bit of an argument internally for the Green Party to have. But it shapes up to be quite the contest in a seat where the Greens have performed well recently. Andy Burnham was already looking at a rather busy diary in these first few months in office. Well, a little dart courtesy of his predecessor, has just landed on Andy Burnham's board, and frankly, one he could do without.